from inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mandata! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer, and somehow it's answered!
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point. Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman. Syracuse has its hands full in the second round of the ACC tournament tonight against North Carolina. We're going to break it all down for you here on the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. I'm Brendan Mortensen alongside Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman. And first, let's talk about how we got here. A 69-65 loss at Miami on Saturday drops Syracuse down to the sixth seed in the tournament, and it's a much harder path. Let's talk about that Miami game a little bit. An overtime loss that it's another one of those Syracuse games where everything about it told you that this should have been an Orange victory, and it just slips through their fingers.
Yeah, you play the second half without Elijah Hughes, who goes down with a head injury, bangs his head against Barama Sidibe's knee. Doesn't seem like it's too big of an issue. It looks like he is probable to play in the ACC tournament. He's been practicing down in Greensboro. But when you look at this game and the chances that Syracuse had, it just seemed like a missed opportunity, as you were saying. Girard hits that big two to tie things up at the end of regulation. And that momentum just didn't carry over into overtime. A lot of forced shots, especially from Girard. You kind of look at him, and he tried to take over the game when he didn't necessarily have to. He had to let that offense flow a little bit more, and I think that was one of the big issues that Syracuse had in that overtime is they didn't really run the offense. They ran more of an ISO-type style where Girard was taking step-back threes and contested threes, and that's not what you want. They were forcing a lot in overtime instead of trying to let the offense flow a little bit more like you've seen throughout the season.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people will use maybe Elijah Hughes' injury as a bit of an excuse or a crutch for this team, but you have to remember the Hurricanes didn't have Chris Likes either, mm-hmm. who's a major part of their offense, arguably as big as Hughes is to Syracuse.
Yeah.
This is just a massive missed opportunity and really a disappointing loss. It wasn't like this win was going to do a ton for the Orange tournament resume, obviously, but a loss like this has pretty much set them out now where they have to win the ACC tournament. It's just, you can't shoot this poorly and expect to win games.
No.
You shoot 35 from the field, 20% from three. I mean, if Joe Girard and Buddy Boeheim are both going to go 2-for-10 from beyond the arc, you know, can Syracuse win any games?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Especially against better opponents than Miami. I mean, Miami is supposed to be one of your easier games down the stretch, and as you head into the ACC tournament, an even tougher schedule. So if you can't start figuring out this three-point issue, as we were kind of saying before we got on air, it's been a struggle for a good chunk of the season. Buddy has not really been shooting the same way you saw him shoot earlier in the season. Girard hasn't really had that high percentage game from three in a while, and Elijah Hughes has been playing well, but not necessarily incredible. Obviously, he has that great game against Boston College, but when you look at, you know, the whole team and the three-point shooting, you've got three guys that can shoot from beyond the arc, and you've got three guys that can even think about shooting from beyond the arc. And when all three of them are struggling or one of them is not playing and the other two can't seem to find the bottom of the net, you've got a huge problem for Syracuse.
Yeah, and those three, Joe Girard, Buddy Boeheim, and Elijah Hughes, were a combined 5 of 24 from behind the arc. For the other side, Miami, DJ Vasiljevic was 5 of 13 by himself. So, I mean, this Syracuse team just wasn't able to score. You said, I mean, 20% from three, 37% from the floor, and 63% from the free throw line. Let's not forget about that either. I mean, Syracuse just didn't shoot the ball well in any way, and that's just not going to win any games. And like you said, Ben, it's not a tournament resume win, but it's certainly a bad loss, and it puts you in a really tough position in the ACC tournament. Syracuse controlled its own destiny going into this Miami game. Win, and you're the number 5 seed in the ACC tournament. Lose, you fall to number 6. The number 5 seed in the ACC tournament right now is NC State. They play Pittsburgh. Syracuse is now forced to play North Carolina, who had a really nice game last night against Virginia Tech, a 22-point win over a Hokies team that Syracuse has had a really close season series with. And North Carolina, we saw what they did when they came to the Carrier Dome, and now you see what they do against a team that Syracuse has matched up pretty evenly with. Does not bode too awful well for the Orange.
No, and North Carolina has had a very kind of anomaly of a season. You play a lot of the year without Cole Anthony. They weren't great even when he was on the team, and even when he came back, it took them a while to start to find this groove. It's not your typical UNC team. It's got a little bit more reliance on a single player than you've seen in years past. I think you expect a more holistic team out of North Carolina, but at the end of the day, they seem to have found their stride right at the perfect time when, I mean, this was a season that a lot of people said was washed, and as you kind of look, they've got potential to upset anyone right now. I don't know if they're going to be able to make the complete run and sneak their way into the NCAA tournament as a bid stealer, but they're as tough a team as any to play in this second round game.
Definitely a team you didn't want to run into. I mean, I'm winning that Miami game could have set Syracuse up in such a better position. Of course, they thought at one point that maybe they would go up against Virginia. That didn't turn out that way. But you look at this North Carolina team, I'm not in love with the bench, but the starters are legit. I mean, I really think that this could be a starting lineup for your typical North Carolina team. A lot of just the transfers and new guys that have come onto the bench haven't worked out in the same way. But Brandon Robinson shot 5 for 6 from 3 last night. Leaky Black has been really solid for them all year.
Love Leaky Black.
You know, Cole Anthony can score 30 points any night, you know. And then if Garrison Brooks, who has a ton of experience, shoots well, it's a lot to deal with.
Yeah.
North Carolina is going to work the ball inside heavily. And Barama Sidibe, who has played better recently, is going to have, you know, maybe his performance of the season.
And North Carolina won this game by 22 with Cole Anthony only scoring 10 points. Cole Anthony was 3 of 10 from the floor, just 1 of 3 from deep. I mean, Anthony destroyed Syracuse when they were in the Carrier Dome for 25 points, and he was 7 of 11 from 3.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a North Carolina team that just demolished Virginia Tech, and its best player did not play well? That's trouble for Syracuse. I mean, everything that North Carolina was doing last night was effective. I mean, 46-30 in the second half, Carolina has the advantage, and Cole Anthony isn't even the best player on the floor.
And even his shooting performance was a little bit of an anomaly against North Carolina, but it just goes to show you how a different guy can show up every night for them.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to be worried about Anthony and Brooks and Keeling, and then you have to go and score points. And they shut down the Orange in the second half pretty well last time. I'm worried about North Carolina here picking up some momentum and going on some runs.
Yeah.
Their second half surge against Syracuse was very similar to the one they had yesterday against Virginia Tech. And if they get hot, I'm just not sure the Orange have anything to put in their way.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of, you know, the possibility of that Connecticut team with Kemba, who just, you know, they weren't the greatest team. They were a little bit better than UNC throughout the regular season, but just absolutely caught fire in the Big East tournament and then the national tournament and ends up winning a national title. So, like, when you look at a UNC team, and as we mentioned, they're catching that stride. They're starting to figure things out. You mentioned it. My former baseball coach loves this saying, and it seems very fitting for this time. So I'll shout out Fred Terzini here when he says, the best team wins the league. the hottest team wins the conference tournament and the whatever tournament that you're playing in. And that's what you could see out of UNC. They are possibly the hottest team right now. When you look at them and maybe Virginia, who seemed to have figured things out in the last couple of regular season games, they've got a lot of potential. So it just goes to show how bad of a draw Syracuse gets after falling in that Miami game. They had their destiny was in their own hands, and they messed that game up. They should have won that game. They had a really good opportunity. And you mentioned it's a weird situation where both teams are pretty much playing without their best player. And it just goes to show that Syracuse has really struggled this season to perform without Hughes. And without Hughes, Syracuse was exposed. And they lose a big game, and the repercussions have followed. They now have to play a far tougher game in North Carolina than the game that they would have had to play elsewhere in Pittsburgh. So it's just kind of the perfect storm as to what this Syracuse team has been all season. Kind of seems like they get the short end of every stick, and a lot of it seems to be at their own doing.
Yeah, and this is not a 14-18 North Carolina team.
No.
If Cole Anthony is healthy this year for the Tar Heels, we're most likely looking at a team that's maybe not in the top four, but in that range.
I think a 20-win team.
Somewhere around there. Probably around the 4 or 5 seed in the ACC tournament if this North Carolina team is at full strength for the entire season. And it's also important to note that this tournament is being played in UNC Greensboro, which is essentially a home game for North Carolina.
Yeah.
So if you're Syracuse, not only do you have to play a tougher opponent in the Tar Heels, but you're essentially getting them at a home game.
Yeah.
Because, we saw the game last night when North Carolina took on Virginia Tech. It was just blue.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And Virginia Tech's got a better shot of getting fans there than Syracuse.
Right.
I think. You know, no, I don't think there are going to be very few Syracuse fans in the building.
Especially to travel to see this team play with not too many expectations in the ACC tournament. It's a tough sell to get Syracuse fans down there.
And I think it's important to note, too, just how important this Miami game was. Because Syracuse, if you win that game against Miami, you play Pittsburgh. If you win that game, you go on to play Duke, who, yes, is a tough opponent, but that's a massive opportunity for a tournament resume win. And now, as Syracuse, you're playing North Carolina, and if you win this game somehow, you've got to play Louisville, who destroyed you in the regular season.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've got North Carolina, who destroyed Syracuse in the regular season, Louisville, who destroyed Syracuse in the regular season. There's just no way this could have been a tougher path.
If they get that win against Miami, I think you can find a way into the tournament without winning the ACC tourney.
Right.
And that path that now presents itself after Virginia gets the big win against Louisville and jumps to number two, that path was right there. Syracuse would have played a game against Duke and then theoretically a game against Florida State. And if they win one, maybe they've got a small chance at getting in. If they win both of those, they don't necessarily need to win the ACC championship to get the auto bid. I think you beat Duke and Florida State, you've got the resume that you need, those two quality wins that have been lacking on this team's resume to try and propel your way into the tournament. So this run down in the bottom half of the tournament at the 6th seed, you now have that extra loss on there. You've got to basically win out, and if you don't win out, you have absolutely zero chance of making it into the NCAA tournament. That was all on Syracuse. They needed to win that Miami game, and they fell short.
It can't be understated how much better of a matchup Pittsburgh is than North Carolina.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Syracuse has beaten Pittsburgh twice this year. They played Pitt. They went at Pitt right before they lost to North Carolina and won 72-49. You know, that hasn't happened very often this year.
No.
You know, I would be much less worried if I were a Syracuse fan to go into a Pitt game and a Duke game than to go North Carolina-Louisville. Mm-hmm. You're playing two of the teams that have dominated you the most this season that have solid inside presences and are just going to expose the Orange's weaknesses in all likelihood.
And to hear a little bit more about the ACC tournament, Ben caught up with play-by-play broadcaster for college basketball, Wes Durham.
We're joined by Wes Durham of the ACC Network. He is the co-host of Packer and Durham, which is on weekday mornings from 7 to 10 a.m. He is also the voice of play-by-play basketball and football on the ACC Network. Thank you for joining the show today, Wes. We appreciate it.
Ben, happy to be here. Thanks for asking.
So we're recording this on Tuesday, but it'll come out on Wednesday, and it will be the day that Syracuse begins the ACC tournament. But the tournament begins today with a couple games between Wake Forest and Pitt, Virginia Tech and North Carolina. It's been a bit of a crazy year for the ACC. So just to start it off, who's your favorite going into this tournament? It feels like there's no consensus here.
Well, there's probably not, because it has been a different year. It's been a different year just in structure. It's been a different year in terms of, you know, kind of what we expected to what we've been given. I mean, the team we picked outside the top four won the regular season at Florida State. The team we picked in the top four finished last in North Carolina. So, I mean, yeah, it's been different. We played 20 games. We started the year with conference games. I mean, I don't know why anybody's surprised we should have a consensus or we don't have a consensus. My expectation for the tournament is going to be that, you know, you kind of keep it in pods here, if you will, to use an NCAA term. There's this pod of the four teams right at the front, which is obviously Florida State that won the regular season, Virginia, who had a remarkable second half, certainly Louisville, who had moments, who were briefly number one in the country, and certainly Duke, who finished fourth in the way this thing fell out. And then I think to myself, okay, well, while the four teams are right there, I have to remember that only 17 times in 66 years of the ACC tournament, then have the top four teams played in the semifinals of this event. And it's only happened, I think, four times since 2000. So while I sit there and say, well, you know, we're going to get the top four, well, wait a second, we never get the top four. But two of the last 4 years, we've gotten the top four. So, you know, again, it's hard to draw conclusions of this. My expectation is that one thing I do think we're going to have is a lot of close games. To the point that a third of the games this year in ACC play were five or less. We've set a league record for overtime games with 14 in conference play. We had a triple overtime and a double overtime game. You know, I'm more aligned to see that, I think, than I am to tell you who's going to win. It's based on what's transpired so far.
The way the standings shook out, at least, Florida State, of course, as you mentioned, won the regular season in the ACC for the first time in program history. Should we be surprised about this team? I know Devin Vassell is great, but they don't have a marquee kind of star like Nwora or maybe Vernon Carey. But is Florida State legit?
Yeah, I think they're legit, Ben, and I think the reason they're legit is that they're really good. You just said it. They're a really good team. In fact, they're the first ACC team to win the regular season since Carolina did it in 2011 without a first-team All-ACC player. And you mentioned Devin Vassell, and, you know, I think part of the reason they didn't have a first-team All-ACC player is because some of the people voting couldn't decide between Devin Vassell and Trent Forrest, to be honest with you. And then you mentioned Jordan Wara. I would say Jordan Wara, Elijah Hughes, John Mooney at Notre Dame, Vernon Carey and Trey Jones, who were the first team, were much more pronounced, if you will, in their presence during the league. So I think Florida State's really good. I think the other trick that they pull is they're really deep. And they got guys that can play across the board. And I think that's a big, big deal, by the way. I think the fact that they are as deep as they are, as versatile as they are, I joke with people all the time, I think they've got a penalty kill lineup for defense. They got a power play lineup for offense. I mean, I just think they're really, really versatile and really, really flexible. And I think Leonard Hamilton is really one of the more unsung coaches in all of college basketball who over the long haul, has made a real high impact on ACC play.
Do you think there's maybe a little bias against a guy like Vassell because he's more of a two-way player as opposed to just, you know, a prolific scorer like guys like Nwora or Hughes?
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. Vassell, to me, is – I don't know that there's bias on it. I just think you have a hard time breaking apart a singular player off that really good team. And I mentioned 2011 with North Carolina when they won the regular season, Ben. They had Tyler Zeller, Harrison Barnes, and John Henson were three Carolina players on the second team. And – at the same time, I remember in 2011, we also had a problem with that. As much as you thought Zeller was doing this or Henson that or Barnes this, I think you had to look at Carolina and go, boy, that's a really, really good team. And That's the way I see Florida State. I think that's why they're poised to make a nice run in March. I think they could get the tournament next week and have a real factor. And see, here again, if we went and polled 100 people who say they follow college basketball and asked them, did Florida State make the Elite Eight last year? I'd be interested to see how many people get that right, you know? I mean, how many people do you think would remember that Florida State was an Elite Eight team last year and a Sweet 16 team the year before?
Very few.
See, they've been there, and we've forgotten that they've been there because Leonard Hamilton said it best Saturday after they secured the regular season title against Boston College. He said, you know, it's 16 years in, but we're a new blood. I mean, yeah. He's right. They are a new blood. They're not the first name that comes to mind when you think of the basketball blue bloods or old heads that are in the ACC. And good for him, and good for the Seminoles, because they've watched him craft this program now into really, really one of the better programs, not only in the ACC, but I think in college basketball, too.
Another program in the ACC that's made a lot of deep runs is the Virginia Cavaliers. They started this year off maybe a little weaker than years previous, and people weren't sure if they were going to be able to make up some of the losses like Jerome and Guy. But they've really hit their stride here. Do you think Virginia is peaking at the right time, and can they do something big here in the ACC tournament?
Well, they certainly got a flair for the dramatic, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, the way they've ended the regular season with all these wins and all of them seemingly last possession or second to last possession, you know, anywhere from 1 to 4, 1 to 5 point margins, it's really quite remarkable what they've done. But it also shows you, again, the difference between a team and a program, I think, because what Tony Bennett's done is build the program. And everybody says, well, they won the national championship, so they've got that experience. Yeah, but not a lot of the premium experience, although I think Diakite and Clark certainly bring it to the table. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I'm not sure Jay Huff played any meaningful minutes last year in the national title game against Texas Tech. I know Braxton Key had a big shot, but Walden Tensai, he was in junior college. Casey Morcell was in Northern Virginia, Maryland, playing high school ball. I mean, you know, they just don't have a lot of guys that you would immediately say beyond Diakite and Kihei Clark that, oh, yeah, I remember those guys. But they brought back enough, and then they got better as the year went on. But let's be honest, Ben, the success of Virginia is going to be defensive-based, but it's also going to be impacted by the way they shoot the ball. And there's no getting around the fact Virginia shot the ball a lot better in the second half of the ACC season than they did certainly in the first month of the season. Because, remember, they lost to South Carolina badly at home and shot the ball brutal. But I think they found their kind of groove. They found their tempo. They found their, you know, they found the difference in this team compared to last season. And I thought you brought up a good point. They lost the heartbeat of that team, those three guys. But it's going to be interesting to see how this particular team handles the postseason. Because I think if they keep it in the middle of the road, they're going to be pretty dangerous now. I mean, because you know nobody wants to play them. See, that's the other thing, too. Name the teams that you absolutely fear in this event, either this week in Greensboro or next week. It's Virginia be on that list because nobody wants to play the way they play. And nobody wants to try and score the ball against the way they defend. And I think that gives them a huge advantage in March.
The tournament is a good time for teams to maybe bolster their position in March Madness or even try and get in. One team that's been mentioned on the bubble a lot is NC State. What do you think they necessarily need to do in the ACC tournament to qualify, or do you think they already kind of have their foot in the race?
Well, as we recorded this, Joe Lenardi has them in his last four in, right?
Yes.
I would go this way. If NC State wins one game, I still think they're on the bubble, but I think they're probably playing to the plus side of it, okay? If they win two games, and that second win would be Duke. If they win two games and the second win is Duke, they're in. They're totally in. I think we both would agree with that. I mean, one more win against Duke, which would be a huge win for them. It'd be a quad one win, no matter how you space it. I think you would see NC State easily into the event. If they win just one, I think they're probably going to be okay, but don't hold me to it. If they don't win at all, Ben, I think it's easy not to put them in, to be honest. I think it's really easy for the committee to go somewhere else with one of those last spots, unless the bottom falls out of this deal nationally, which you and I know rarely happens.
So out of those other teams, you know, who has the most to gain here? If it's not going to be NC State, is there someone else in the conference that maybe has a chance to push their team into the NCAA tournament?
Well, we told you Clemson, but they kind of screwed it up last week, losing at Virginia Tech and at home last Friday night to Georgia Tech. I thought Clemson had the Duke, Louisville, Florida State triumphant at home. Granted, they were home games. They're not great road players at this particular point in the season. They proved it at Blacksburg. And then, you know, they let Georgia Tech come back and beat them last Friday night to close the regular season. I would say Clemson because, you know, the thing that the rest of the league suffers from, and you can understand this following Syracuse, nobody has great November-December wins, you know. I mean, NC State has Wisconsin, which, depending on the week you look at it, you know, looks good or looks okay or maybe looks great. And now it turns out it looks like a great win. But on the whole, nobody else has any great November-December moments. In fact, I would argue whether you go all the way down to Carolina to find their win against Oregon or maybe Alabama. And those are, to be honest with you, some of the better non-conference wins of the ACC. That's one of the things with all the different things that have gone on this year we talked about early. That's what's happened in this league now, that you don't have that November-December banner to hang right now. There's not a great win out there, you know, to pull one of those lower level teams up. And I think that's a big part of it too.
You mentioned Syracuse. They enter the tournament as the number 6 seed. Just to start, what do you think of their draw? They're going to go up against either Virginia Tech or North Carolina. If you're a Syracuse fan, which team do you maybe want to avoid out of those two and why?
I would want to avoid Carolina. Carolina would be the team that would concern me the most if I was Syracuse because the way they shot the ball against you at the dome toward the end of the regular season. I mean, now are they going to hit that many threes again? Is Cole Anthony going to hit 7 of them? I don't know about that, but I think you've got to be cognizant of the fact that Carolina is playing a lot better than, you know, maybe they were earlier in the season or at any point in the season. You know, the Virginia Tech game will be just the 8th conference game that they have Brandon Robinson, Cole Anthony, and Garrison Brooks on the floor at the same time. And so Virginia Tech, to me, is so predicated on one thing and one thing only, and that is the ability to score the ball, just as, you know, Syracuse knows from the loss at Blacksburg, loss at Syracuse, but then Syracuse got the great game from Buddy Boeheim at Blacksburg. To me, Syracuse has to get – you got to tell me what Elijah Hughes is going to be, 100%, close to 100%. With Gerard, Boeheim, and Hughes, Syracuse can counter just about anybody. But, you know, one of the reasons I think Notre Dame might be an outlier in this event is because they put 5 3-point shooters on the floor at the same time. I think it makes a big difference.
The Orange, of course, if they were to win the tournament, they would get into March Madness. But other than that, it does seem like it will take a tough road. How do you see it shaping out? Do you think there's any way that they could not win the ACC tournament and still qualify for March Madness?
No, not now. Not now. The loss Saturday in overtime at Miami is one of those that you just can't have. You got to show your ability to win on the road, to be honest. And you had done it at points this year. Good heavens. I mean, the win at Virginia, you know, you got a couple different earmarks along the way, but the way things go down the stretch, even though the committee says they look at everything in a 1/32nd valve, I still think that it's I still think there's impact for what happens late. And I thought the overtime loss the other day was not a good one. I thought the loss prior to that at home against Carolina wasn't a good one. So yeah, I think Syracuse is probably a situation where they got to come to Greensboro and win to get in.
All right, I couldn't get you to pick a favorite at the top of the show, but I'm going to try and get you to pick a dark horse now. We've talked a little Clemson, a little NC State, a little Notre Dame. So outside of the top four, if you were going to pick a team, maybe not even to win it, but to make a run and maybe turn up here in the final or semifinal, who's your pick?
Golly. I kind of wish Georgia Tech was in this event, to be honest with you, in some respect. I think that'd be kind of interesting to see as well as they were playing at the end, right? I tell you what, if I got to pick somebody from outside, I don't know, maybe NC State. Maybe NC State, because they did beat Duke 22, right, in Raleigh. Now they got it handed back by 19 12 days later. So that'll be interesting. NC State, if you really want to go deep in this, Carolina, to me, if they're going to be Carolina that we saw in three of the last four games, I mean, I think everybody would agree they'll have a decent chance, right? I think they would be very interesting to watch. Carolina is the team that, because it's Virginia Tech, Syracuse, and then potentially Louisville, I would think Carolina, who, by the way, played the Louisville game without Garrison Brooks, I would think Carolina might be the deep dark horse at this point.
All right. Thank you very much for joining the show, Wes. We really appreciate it. You can tune in to Wes's show every weekday morning on the ACC Network, Packer and Durham, from 7 to 10 a.m. I hope you enjoy the ACC tournament. We are going to enjoy watching it from Syracuse and see if the Orange can make that championship run.
Thanks so much again to Wes Durham for his time. And guys, let's talk a little bit more about this Syracuse-North Carolina game tonight. I don't have high hopes, I'm going to be honest. I mean, watching what North Carolina was able to do in the Carrier Dome, we talk about how they've kind of gone on these runs in the second half. In the Carrier Dome, Carolina was up 40-35 at halftime, ends up winning the second half 52-44. But, I mean, both of those halves just kind of felt dominated. And yes, I know that North Carolina played much better in that second half. But even in the first half, Carolina was just clearly the better team. I don't know. Convince me otherwise that this isn't just a really bad matchup for Syracuse.
It's a terrible matchup. And when you look at that, the first game between the two in the Carrier Dome, yes, it was only a 5-point game at half, but that was in large part due to a late push. Syracuse was down by double digits with a couple of minutes left. They hit some big shots towards the end of the half to make that a close game.
It felt like the Louisville game. The Louisville game was a 7-point deficit at halftime. Yeah. That felt like a much larger deficit than 7 points, because you just kind of knew that Louisville was going to really break things open in the second half.
Mm-hmm. And then the same thing goes for North Carolina. You kind of could see they were on the verge of it, and then they just didn't miss in the second half. 57% from the field, 64% from three as a team. It was just, you couldn't get them to miss. They shot 90% from the charity stripe. Everything that Syracuse might have tried just didn't seem like it could work, because North Carolina was hitting shots at an unparalleled clip. And I don't think that you're going to see Carolina play like that again this season. That second half was an anomaly. They've had moments where they get close, but that was probably the best half of basketball I've seen Carolina play all year, and Syracuse was just there at the wrong time. But I think if North Carolina even has an above-average half, or a half that you saw them play against Virginia Tech last night, that they're winning that game. There's no chance at Syracuse coming back. They really had no fight in them in the second half. Yes, they were trying. I'm not going to go out and say that they weren't. But, like, when you look at the team and when you look at just how easy it seemed like North Carolina had it, a lot of clean looks, Syracuse on the other end missing pretty open looks. I remember that stretch with Gerard in the corner missing back-to-back wide-open threes, leaves the first one short, gets the offensive rebound, dished right back out to him, and leaves the second one basically an identical spot, leaves it as short as the first one. You've got to be able to make that quick adjustment, figure something out, and Syracuse just wasn't really able to. And when you get a game against a struggling North Carolina team, because they really had not yet found their stride at that point in the season, when you look at what they had done, they were only on a one-game winning streak. They were 1-7 under Cole Anthony at that point with him back. They had lost 7 straight. They get a win against NC State, and they come to the Carrier Dome with some momentum, but not a ton, and they leave with a boatload of momentum because everything just seemed to work for them, and Syracuse really with no counterattack for the way they were playing.
My biggest concern here is a pretty familiar storyline. UNC leads the conference in rebounding and leads the conference in offensive rebounds. Mm-hmm. 42 rebounds per game, nearly 14 offensive rebounds per game. Syracuse, not only do they have to make sure that North Carolina doesn't catch fire, but they need to shoot a lot better than they have been recently.
Yeah.
They are not going to be able to win or even remotely stay close, I think, in the rebounding game. because there are guys like Baycott that are just going to dominate their bigs down low. The Orange have to have at least a mediocre three-point shooting performance, and assuming Hughes is healthy, they need him and one of the other two guards to put up, you know, at least 20.
Yeah,
at least 20.
Mm-hmm. Because this North Carolina team may not play great defense, but they can score still. They average about 73 points per game, and they're going to need big performances out of multiple guys on both sides of the ball. And I agree with you, Brennan. I'm just not sure I'm convinced it's going to happen.
Well, Syracuse didn't have a terrible game offensively when these two teams played. I mean, Buddy Boeheim had 22. It wasn't a fantastic 22, but 22 nonetheless. Elijah Hughes with 19, kind of the same thing there.
And shout out the boy.
Not a great 19. Barama Sidibe,
17 probably and 15.
Arguably the best game of Barama Sidibe's career. 17 points, 15 rebounds, 6 blocks. I mean, you're not getting that from Barama Sidibe again. I could almost guarantee you that. Joe Girard, though, only 9 points in that game. 2 of 8 from behind the arc, 3 of 12 shooting. And Marek Dolezal with 6 points, and Quincy Guerrier with 6. So you get some solid production from the top in Buddy Boeheim and Elijah Hughes, and I guess Sidibe as well.
Not then, I guess. He scored 17. Give him the credit.
And then Joe Girard, Marek Dolezal, Quincy Guerrier only combined for 21 points. I mean, that's you can't do that. Mm-hmm. If you're Girard, Dolezal, and Guerrier, I think this is the kind of game where you're going to need 20 from whether it be Buddy and Hughes or, you know, Hughes and Girard, one of those two, like you said, Ben. And then you're going to need Dolezal to put up double digits. You're going to need Guerrier to put up double digits.
I think you need 5 in double figures.
I would agree with that.
Unless you're getting really well-distributed points from, you know, the guys that aren't your huge scorers in terms of Guerrier and Sidibe. And, I mean, you've got to get at least 10, I think, from Boeheim, from Hughes, from Girard, from Dolezal. And then I think your other 4 need to combine for 20. So you've got to be able to get that step. And I think in terms of individual player, I think the most, not most valuable, but most important player in this game is Sidibe. Because you've seen in the last, you know, 4 or 5 game stretch what he can do when he's not in foul trouble too early. And when he's able to play a little bit more freely, he's had a really strong stretch, averaging, I think, over 11 rebounds per game and close to 10 points per game over his last 5. If he can continue that stretch and put those numbers up while playing a somewhat competent defensive game, then Syracuse is going to be in a much better spot, because if he gets into that early foul trouble that you've seen time and time again all season, it's going to put Syracuse in a horrible place, dig them a gigantic hole, basically a 6-foot and, you know, maybe 6 feet deep and 6 feet wide hole, also known as a grave for Syracuse's season.
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit, because I think the key in this game is going to be Joe Girard.
Okay, I can hear that.
I think if Joe Girard scores, you know what you're going to get out of Elijah Hughes. Mm-hmm. Elijah Hughes is going
to
give you somewhere in the 17 to 24 range. That's just what Elijah Hughes is going to give you. Buddy Boeheim is a little bit of a different case, because sometimes Buddy will give you like 0, and then sometimes he'll give you 18. But I think Buddy will probably give you somewhere in the mid-teens. I think Joe Girard needs to have upper teens points in this game if Syracuse is going to win. Because Joe Girard, I mean, it sounds a little redundant, but Joe Girard is the point guard. He is literally the one who makes this offense go. And yes, you've got other scorers on the wing in Hughes and Boeheim, but if Joe Girard is able to hit threes, if Girard is able to drive and kick to those guys, the offense just looks completely different. And I agree with you that Barama Sidibe can do that similar kind of thing as well, where if Barama Sidibe is playing well, then all of a sudden you have a presence inside, and that helps those guys on the outside. But I think Joe Girard, A, is probably more likely to give you some better offensive production, because, yes, Sidibe has been rebounding the ball better, but, I mean, you look at the Miami game, Barama Sidibe had 10 rebounds, but he only had 2 points on 1 of 3 shooting. So it's not incredibly likely that Barama Sidibe is going to give you another 17 points on 5 of 6 shooting and 7 of 8 from the free throw line. Sure, you would love that as a Syracuse fan, but I think it's much more likely that you're going to get a higher scoring game from Joe Girard, and I think that's just what needs to happen. I think if Girard is playing well, then it opens up more opportunities for Buddy Boeheim, more opportunities for Elijah Hughes, and this offense just works better because North Carolina is going to score, and they're going to score a lot. And if you're Syracuse, yes, you need to focus on the defensive end, on trying to contain Cole Anthony, trying to contain Garrison Brooks, but the focus needs to be on the offensive side because you're not going to stop North Carolina. You're just going to try to contain them. And on the offensive side, you've got to keep up. And I think that starts with Girard.
If you have to lean on those bigs, I think that's where you get in a little bit of trouble. Even Dolezal, who is a much different offensive player than Sidibe, not to group them together, but this team runs off the guards. You need the guards to provide the scoring. One thing I'm a little interested in is to see how much Guerrier gets used in this game.
Yeah. Right.
He went through a really hot stretch where he double-doubled a couple times, had four straight games where he had 13 or more points. And then his minutes got cut a lot, and he hasn't played very well, so I understand it. But
well, it's interesting because Sidibe has played so well that Guerrier has kind of just not seen the floor that much, mm-hmm. even though Guerrier didn't really do anything to get taken off.
He was going through his best stretch of the season,
right.
But then Sidibe just got even hotter than Guerrier did.
And then Guerrier just got off his rhythm for not playing that much.
But if you want more offense in there, then I think you go, as much as it may compromise defense, then you have to go Dolezal Guerrier at some points in the game.
I agree.
Instead mm-hmm. of going Dolezal Sidibe. And some would argue that Guerrier guards the wing better than Dolezal does, but I'm not sure I agree with that. But I think you need to use Guerrier more in this game than you have in the past. Sidibe, you were riding the hot hand, and I understand that. But if I'm Jim Boeheim, Guerrier can provide an offensive spark sometimes. Sometimes he comes in and he misses all his shots. But sometimes he comes in and he can provide a lot of power on the glass, especially in the offensive boards, and put in some dunks or some nice layups and really get it going. To keep up with North Carolina, I think Guerrier needs to play 25 minutes or more, which he mm-hmm. has not seen very often in the last couple games.
I'm interested to see how Syracuse comes out defensively, because I feel like they've been incredibly flat the last couple of games, and especially throughout basically the entire season. And when you look at the top of the zone, and this was a point I made right after that Miami game, I'm starting to, and it's been progressively happening, but I'm really out on Girard and Boeheim defensively. They don't do anything. They're not quite athletic enough.
The top of the zone has been bad.
The top of the zone provides nothing defensively. There aren't hands in the passing lane. They're not getting those steals that you've seen at times, but that you pretty much consistently see out of the top of the zone historically under the Boeheim 2-3, and that's not what you've seen. The steals haven't been there. They're not in the passing lane, and it's a little bit because, you know, Girard's a smaller guy, and Boeheim is not as athletic as you've seen guards at the top of the zone be historically, but these guys have really struggled, and they're not closing out as efficiently. I feel like they're running by ball fakes far too often, top to bottom. In both parts of the zone, they're running by ball fakes, and basically any time you kind of put a decent shot fake together, someone flies by or someone takes flight, which you can easily draw a foul off of or just dribble right past them if you haven't used your dribble yet. And that's where a lot of these opportunities are coming for other teams. So Syracuse is going to need to play a far better defensive game. And I think it starts with some sort of improvement out of Girard and Boeheim at the top of the zone.
Yeah, the zone has just really gotten exposed this year, more so than I think I've ever seen the zone get exposed.
Yeah, it's just the wrong personnel to run it.
Right, and I agree that it's Girard and Boeheim. It starts with them. But even the wings, I mean, the positioning of the wings has not been great. Elijah Hughes obviously gives you a ton of athleticism. But
I don't think he's great on the wings.
His positioning on the wings in the zone is not great. Quincy Guerrier's positioning on the wings is bad.
Yeah.
I mean, those are two guys that will make up for their positioning because of their athleticism. But so much of this 2-3 zone and what makes it so good and unique for Jim Boeheim is the fact that it just doesn't operate like other 2-3s.
No.
Because other 2-3s are much easier to break down, and that's what we're kind of seeing right now.
Yeah.
I mean, say what you will about, you know, guards from the past like Frank Howard. He's certainly faced his fair share of criticism, but Frank Howard is one of the best 2-3 defensive zone guards that Jim Boeheim has had, period. I mean, he was all over passing lanes.
Mm-hmm.
He was really athletic and quick. And Tyus Battle as well. Tyus Battle wasn't the best defender in the world, but Tyus Battle was a great athlete,
yeah.
And he was disruptive.
Mm-hmm.
So you go from Frank Howard and Tyus Battle to Joe Girard and Buddy Boeheim. I mean, I've liked what I've seen out of Girard in his kind of trying to make up for his lack of height. Like, he's aggressive. Like, he'll go after lanes and try to get steals. But a lot of times he overcompensates. And Buddy Boeheim
can't
really
hasn't
used his length well. Yeah. I mean, Buddy Boeheim's not a short guy.
No, 6'6".
Right.
Use the length.
And it's kind of just been everywhere in the zone hasn't been good. Because we've talked about the wings positioning. We've talked about up top. And then arguably the biggest problem, down low. I mean, Barama Sidibe has played better recently, but just always gets into foul trouble. And then Dolezal, when he comes in, isn't great at the five in the zone. Mm. It's just a lot of issues piling up.
I think part of this goes back to the lack of Bryson Goodon being an option, too. It would be very helpful if he could come in. Because he's not huge, but he's 6'3", which is bigger than
Gerard,
and it can make a big difference. And he's a lot longer, definitely.
And more athletic.
Much more athletic. And I do find it a little ironic because, in my opinion, definitely, the most important length is at the top of the zone.
Yeah.
And then to the wings, and then in the middle. You need a big guy in the middle, but he doesn't need to be your
you
longest
guy. You can get away
guy.
With a smaller guy in the middle, as you've seen with Dolezal.
Yet we constantly have recruited the longest big guys, but we're playing a 6-foot guy at the top of the zone. Or they are playing a 6-foot guy, pardon me, at the top of the zone. It frustrates me slightly because I think the whole point of Jim Boeheim's teams, to a certain extent, is sacrificing some of that offense for the defense. Like, it comes down to the zone, because especially when you get into tournaments and teams that haven't seen you, they have nothing for it. There hasn't been enough of a compromise for the zone this year. It's been too much focus on the offense. I'm not there at every practice. I'm not there in the locker room. I haven't seen Goodine's development, but I was a little surprised that his playing time never really seemed to really even get a chance to grow.
Right. And Joe Girard gets a lot of the Jerry McNamara comparisons. GMAC was still 6'2". I mean, GMAC is still taller than Joe Girard. And was better at the top of the zone. So
you got to put some respect on Jerry McNamara.
I know, and a far better basketball player.
Like, well, brighter scorer. I like Joe Girard, but Jerry McNamara was a really good college basketball player.
I'm not saying they're the same players by any means, but I am saying that a lot of people have kind of tried to give Joe Girard that, like, oh, maybe in 3 years he'll kind of try to go into that role of being similar to Jerry McNamara. Mm-hmm. Certainly not trying to disrespect Coach McNamara.
Hit a runner from beyond the arc to win an AC or a Big East tournament game.
20-foot runner split the defenders.
If Girard as a senior is GMAC as a freshman, I'd be pretty happy, to be honest.
Right.
Yeah. You know. Be great development on a Girard. So you see it at moments, but
come on,
give GMAC some credit here because he was that man from the start, basically.
Right. All right, let's circle back a little bit. Let's go into some predictions for tonight's game as Syracuse takes on North Carolina in the second round of the ACC tournament. I think I've been pretty clear in my stance that I don't think this is going to be a good matchup for Syracuse, and that's kind of how I'm going. I think North Carolina wins this game by 10. I think SU comes a little bit closer than the Orange did in the Carrier Dome a few weeks ago. But I don't think it's a particularly close game. I think Carolina is A, too hot right now, B, much better than their record would suggest, and C, about the worst possible matchup for Syracuse in this second round. I mean, look at the other round two games. I would rather play all of these teams. Clemson, Miami, Pittsburgh, Notre Dame, Boston College. I would rather play all of them than North Carolina. I think Syracuse is catching possibly the hottest team in the ACC, maybe outside of Virginia. It's not going to go well. That's my prediction.
I'm predicting a blowout, too. I was going to go somewhere in like the – I was going to go like 88-73. Like, I want to be a little more optimistic. And I think a lot of this will come at the end of the game. I think the Orange will stick around like they do in the first half. But the physicality mixed with the way that North Carolina has been shooting the ball recently, I don't think they can shoot as well as they have in the last couple games. But even if they get close, you know.
Yeah, I'm going 84-73 Carolina.
All right, I'll stick at 88-73 then.
me 74-72 Syracuse University.
All right,
wow. We'll go bold. I think Syracuse can jump out. They've got a lot to play for. It seems like, you know, the season is at that lull, but they have the ability. You've seen it at times. They can come out and shoot. They've been there. They've hung around. If they can close this game out, I have a feeling it's going to be that situation you've seen time and time again this season. 4 or 5 minutes left, Syracuse is up 6. If they can keep that gas pedal down and finish this game out, I think they beat UNC, and I think they get a quality win, although it doesn't look like a quality win, and although it doesn't mean anything on the tournament resume getting a quality win, but I do think they get the job done tonight, and you know they're going to live to see another day.
Well, we've got two predictions for a North Carolina blowout, one prediction for a Syracuse victory.
Close
so
one.
That is a close Syracuse victory.
It's pretty characteristic of them. You know,
yeah.
Blown out or close win.
It would be very Syracuse to pull us right back in. So if Syracuse wins this game, then it's on to literally see another day, and that another day is tomorrow. Syracuse would take on Louisville tomorrow night at 9.
That one I'm not so optimistic for.
Yeah, we'll talk about that if we get there. If we get there, but first Syracuse has to take down one of the hottest teams in the conference in North Carolina in the second round of the ACC tournament. That's tonight starting at 9:30. Make sure you're tuning in to WAER starting at 9 o'clock. We'll get you started with Countdown to Tip Off here on 88.3 FM. For Ben Shulman and Owen Valentine, I'm Brennan Mortensen. We'll catch you next time.